Thank you.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick.
Can I get more vocal in my ears, please?
And I'm Vincent Cunningham. Earlier this month at the New Yorker Festival, I was really excited to talk to the R&B singer Kalayla. Her music is this wonderful mix of sounds. Sometimes it's woozy along the lines of trip-hop or electronica. At other times, she sounds like a 90s vocalist along the lines of Janet Jackson.
You don't know.
There's a real intelligence in her music, and it points to someone who really understands and appreciates the sources of her own music and also kind of implicates where that music might go in the future. So we talked, and then she also gave an incredible live performance along with one of her producers and DJs, Lorik C. Thank you so much for being here with us for the 19th New Yorker Festival and for this talk with Kalayla. First of all, I have immense respect for any singer or performer or anybody who goes with just the first name. That's a power move as far as I'm concerned. Can you tell, how did you decide, you know, how you wanted to present yourself in that way?
Well, I was really committed to the full name, Kalayla Mizan Christos. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to be known first and last.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was like, Kalayla's distinct enough.
Right.
And you're gonna run into issues when people try to search your name, basically.
Yeah, very strong from this angle, I just gotta say.
Thank you.
I know you grew up in the DC area and that there was a sort of thriving culture of music. What were the things you were listening to as you were starting to perform and to start writing songs? How did that all those influences come together?
You know, it's really weird because, you know, I feel like I've grown up in a really, it's an intersectional experience, you know. There's a lot of things going on at the same time, you know. I'm a daughter of immigrants, of African immigrants, East African immigrants, particularly Ethiopians. And then there's the layer of growing up in a suburb of DC, being bused from a, you know, ghetto suburb to a whiter suburb and what that means, you know. There's a particular way that you're processing the world when your school is extremely segregated. I would say that's the case for everybody, but
yeah.
There's a way it was happening in my school. So I was listening to a lot of different things. You know, I was obsessed with R&B. Any R&B vocal was just, that was like zero. That was home base. And I would say before that, I was listening to jazz and world music and just, you know, a lot of traditional music. And then I remember my ex-boyfriend, my first boyfriend had a Napster membership, one of the first.
Oh, wow. We were all in
and
on
I
that
got
scam,
Napster
yeah.
in the divorce, you know? So I kept that membership for a few years to survey every female vocal, period. I was just on a mission to just scan the world for every single type of singing.
Yeah.
And so I just would learn music in other languages, but mainly jazz. You know, that was the thing that I was sort of serving the most. And so, you know, I've had different periods where I was just immersed in one sound. And then after that, it was sort of a really experimental music, you know?
Yeah.
So electronic and experimental music. When I think about my experimental electronic music side, a lot of those references are still black because I'm thinking about Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, or I'm thinking about Bootsy Collins, or, you know, just even Miles Davis or Herbie's.
Yeah. What was it about R&B that made it sort of that, you said you were kind of more into jazz first and sounds like R&B had some pull on you.
I guess it was just pop music. That was, you know, like there's a way that, you know, you can't, there's no camaraderie around jazz when you get to your elementary school.
The jazz club's not where you want to be, right?
There's no. You don't get to kindergarten and people being like, you know,
blue and green.
The evening breeze. You know, it's not. It's not that. So. Yeah, I think that is just the pull. It's the thing that happens to every human, small human being when they see Michael Jackson for the first time, or when they see, you know, when they hear Mariah, or just any of those sort of big, huge artists will have that pull, you know? But, you know, my love for jazz never died.
I'm looking, I can't keep my head up, 'cause we're talking late at night. I started a song, then I gave up, so I hope this comes out right. Don't say you're in love, baby. Don't say you're in love until you learn to take me apart. Waited up all night. Take me apart. I wait up all night.
In jazz, it's part of what you're supposed to do is right. Reinterpret the standard, you know? That's how you get good. So for me, I've always just been interested in how those things could be flipped and re-presented to you so that you like it in a different way. Yeah.
Speaking of reinterpretation, is there like a song you haven't sung that you want to sing? Any song, it might not
any
be a standard,
song.
Any song that you like, it needs that Kalela sauce on it, and you are...
that Kalela sauce. There are some songs. There's a song called 30 Years by Betty Carter. It's one of my favorite songs in the world. There's a few jazz songs that I'm just like waiting for the prompt, you know, waiting for the... for the appropriate context for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole, I think, organic instruments side to what I do.
How do you sort of manage the business of Kalela? There's the sort of art that you engage in, but then there's also just like the entity that is you. How do you toggle between those two?
It has taken a lot of intention to rally people around who I actually am and not a projection of what they would like me to be.
Yeah.
That is, I think, a struggle for any artist out there. But there's a particular way that, as a Black woman, I'm being asked to present myself while also being undervalued in the grand scheme. There are certain things that just feel very much off limits and just sort of out of reach. Not because I think I'm not excellent, but yeah. just because I'm a brown-skinned Black woman.
When you say things, ways that people will perceive you, or what are those things that
beyond
you that feel?
Beyond perceive me, so like those perceptions really turn into opportunities being available to you or not, just like a very bottom line.
Yeah.
My process through being a businesswoman and an artist has been to get really good at saying no while also, I guess, not killing the vibe. You know? Sometimes you have to kill the vibe, you know? Sometimes the vibe just needs to be killed dead, you know? But other times, there's a way that you want to navigate. You want to shut it down. You want to shut it down, but you don't want to shut them down. You know, so you're trying to express a problem with a dynamic. My business sort of plan is one that's meant to challenge the status quo. It's meant to challenge establishment such that people on the outside will have to deal with, you know, me saying, no, I'm going to bring my own glam. I can't rely on you.
Yeah.
I can't rely on you because you just have never shown up in that way, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many ways I have to do that. I have to assert myself. You know, you can't do this because that's just not how it's done. But how come that white girl did it? I saw her, and her do it. Why can't I do that too?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's just a zillion ways that it's come up, and everybody's had to go through some sort of like training, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Informal.
So what you just described sounds like a whole lot of work, right? Do you think that that work has made it easier for you to do the fundamental thing of like getting yourself across?
Yes, because I was under so much stress before, trying to navigate, you know, trying to be an artist and like protect myself.
Yeah.
Now I have people who are on the outside who are like, sorry, you can't go in there. You know, figuratively speaking. And that makes a huge, that makes me a great deal less stressed out.
Yeah.
You know, it's brought me so much solace to know that the people that I'm working with closely are really for me in that way. And not just for my art, and I think that's actually the issue. That's actually part of a black woman's experience, is feeling like your output is so valued, you know? People love the runs, but they can't love the experience that it comes from.
Yeah.
And that's the end of our talk.
Yeah. So, I was gonna ask something else, but that's exactly somebody. Where to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let's have some more music.
It ain't that deep,
saw your ass fall right past my waist, so let me know. I'm not gonna wait if you hesitate, so let me know.